Welcome back to The Deep Dive. This is the show where we take a whole stack of complex research and, well, we distill it down into what you really need to know.
And today we are digging into a really fascinating and super high stakes area of personalized healthcare.
We're talking about optimizing management for non-severe hemophilia A or HA.
It's such a critical area. I mean, yeah. Traditional treatment has always put doctors and patients in a tough spot, a real dilemma.
Right.
So for you, our listener, we've pulled together several research papers that focus on how to treat these patients, you know, especially when they need to undergo a procedure or surgery.
Okay, so let's set the stage. What is that traditional dilemma? What are the two main options they've always had?
Well, on one hand, you've got factor VIII concentrate, FE8.
The gold standard.
Exactly. It's super effective, but it is astronomically expensive. Supplies can be limited. And the biggest issue is the risk that the patient develops FE8 inhibitors.
Which makes everything harder down the line.
So much harder. And then the alternative.
The alternative is desmopressin, or DDAVP.
Right. It's cheap. It's widely available. But here's the catch.
There's always a catch.
A big one. The patient's response to it is just, it's all over the place.
Right.
Highly variable. And so its use is pretty suboptimal, even for patients who could really benefit. It's a lot of guesswork.
So this stack of sources we're looking at is trying to move beyond that guesswork. Our mission today is to unpack these proposed solutions.
We're talking about things like personalized combination therapies, cost analysis, patient experience.
And even a look at some really novel FEAI-independent treatments.
Yeah, we're tracking this really decisive push away from, you know, just dosing based on body weight toward ultra-personalized medicine, all guided by advanced pharmacokinetics.
Okay, so
right.
Let's unpack this. I think we have to start with that idea of merging treatments.
The David and Little David studies.
Yes. What was the concept there?
So these were some really fascinating studies. They tested what they called combination treatment right around the time of surgery for non-severe HA patients.
Okay.
The idea, the central hypothesis, was to give DDAVP first.
To get the body to release its own FE8.
Exactly. A little natural boost. Then, right after that, they'd follow up with a dose of FE8 concentrate. But, and this is the key, it was a super specific dose tailored using pharmacokinetic or PK guidance.
So you use the cheap drug to get a head start, and then you use meth, the PK model, to figure out the absolute minimum amount of the expensive drug you need to hit your target safely.
That's the core idea, yes. The PK guidance is everything here. They use something called Bayesian forecasting, which is a really powerful predictive model to figure out the exact dose each patient needed.
So it takes the guesswork out.
Completely. You get the boost from DDAVP, but you avoid just throwing massive, costly doses of factor concentrate at the problem.
That sounds great in theory, but how did that precision modeling actually hold up in the real world?
It held up remarkably well. Mm. I mean, it proved to be highly predictive. In the Little David study, the model was, I think it was 83.3% accurate for hitting their peak factor levels.
Wow, that's impressive.
It is. And in the larger David study, it was accurate for hitting their trough levels, the low points, in about 75% of cases on days 1 and 2. They really did achieve personalized targets with high performance.
And that precision must have had a direct impact on how much FE8 they ended up using.
Oh, a huge impact. The results were stark. The Little David study saw a 37% reduction in the pre-op FE8 concentrate dose.
47%? That's almost half.
Almost half. And the larger David study showed a 39% reduction compared to just, you know, the standard body weight dosing. That is a massive saving, considering the cost and scarcity of factor VIII.
Let's talk about the patient side of this. You're adding another step, more blood draws. What about side effects or just the general experience?
The treatment was definitely considered feasible and safe. The side effects were pretty mild, mostly tied to the DDAVP.
Like what?
Flushing was the most common thing. About 76% of patients reported that. And importantly, there were some rare cases of mild asymptomatic hyponatremia.
So their sodium levels dropped a bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
But it only happened after multiple doses, and it was completely preventable just by having patients restrict their fluid intake.
Okay, that seems manageable. But what's really amazing to me is the patient response. Even with the extra time and the blood draws, they rated their experience incredibly high.
They did. The median score for quality of care was a 10. The maximum.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I think patients really valued that precision, that careful attention, over a minor inconvenience. It just gives you peace of mind.
That trust is so powerful. But let's talk about a big limitation with DDAVP, something that really affects its repeated use, tachyphylaxis.
Right. And here's where it gets really interesting. Pachyphylaxis basically just means the drug loses its punch if you use it too many times in a short window.
Your body adapts.
Fast. And the David studies actually quantified this drop-off in a real-world surgical setting.
How steep was that drop?
It was pretty steep. The FVA8 increase on the second day of use was only about 42.9% of what they saw on the first day.
So less than half the response.
Yep. And by the third day, it was even lower, down to just 36.4% of that original response. It really confirmed that Duty AVP is a great tool to start with, but you can't rely on it for sustained levels over multiple days.
Which perfectly explains why you need that combination approach. DDAVP gets you going, and the PK-guided FE8 takes over.
Exactly.
But let's zoom out a bit. Why is DDAVP use in general so suboptimal, even for patients who respond well to a single dose?
We have some data on patient perspectives, and it paints a really nuanced picture.
Okay.
On one hand, a huge number of patients said it was effective. 80% of adults, 83% of kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they loved the convenience of the nasal spray and being able to treat at home.
Those are huge quality of life wins. So what are the roadblocks?
The main disadvantages were side effects and, kind of surprisingly, cost.
Cost? But I thought you said it was the cheap option.
It is, but this is a fascinating point about how healthcare systems work. This data came from the Netherlands, where patients have a mandatory yearly deductible.
Okay, around 385 in the survey.
Right. And one single container of the DDAVP nasal spray can eat up that entire deductible.
Wow.
Yeah. And when you add in the fact that the drug has a really short shelf life, patients who only need it for rare bleeds end up paying that big bill just to have it on hand, and they might even throw it away unused.
So a low-cost medicine becomes a huge annual expense. That's a powerful insight.
It is. And the study also found a knowledge gap.
Mm-hmm.
About a quarter of patients felt like their knowledge about the drug was unsatisfactory or just unknown.
So better education could really boost its use where it's appropriate.
For sure.
All right, let's pivot back to that combination treatment and the financial side. We know it reduces FV8 use, but does all the extra complexity and nurse time cancel out the savings?
That's the million-dollar question, right?
Yeah.
But the analysis confirmed that, yes, it remained cost-saving overall.
How much so?
Compared to the hypothetical body weight dosing, the combination treatment led to a mean reduction of about 10% in total costs per procedure. That's about 1,000 euros saved.
1,000 euros is not nothing, but 10% isn't world-changing. And we know how valuable staff time is. How do you balance that?
That is the critical trade-off. The IVDDAVP does take up a lot more nursing time.
Mm-hmm.
But this is where the power of PK modeling really shines, not just here, but across the whole treatment landscape.
What do you mean?
Well, think about other expensive non-factor therapies, like emicizumab.
A standard prophylactic treatment now.
Right. Research shows that if you apply this same PK-guided dosing to emicizumab, aiming for optimal trough levels instead of a fixed dose, you could theoretically reduce yearly costs by about 29,529 tavels for some patients.
Wait, 29,000 euros?
Per year. It shows that moving away from one-size-fits-all dosing is the future, both clinically and economically.
That really puts the power of PK into perspective. So back to the combination therapy, how did they streamline that immediate time burden on the nurses?
They looked at a couple of scenarios. The most effective one was switching from IV DDDAVP to subcutaneous or SC administration under the skin.
And how much time did that save?
A huge amount. Between 94 and 171 minutes of nursing time per procedure. That's nearly half the total time they had allocated.
Half the time. But I'm guessing the subcutaneous version costs more.
It does, yeah. It increased the total cost by a little bit, maybe 127 to 181 euro. So you're trading a small amount of money for a massive chunk of your staff's day.
And the other option was limiting the blood work.
Right. Omitting one of the FE8 measurements right after the DDAVP saved about 12 minutes, and it cut costs by a tiny amount.
So the big conclusion here is that you can keep the cost savings from reducing FE8, but also dramatically cut the time burden on staff?
Yes. By combining subcutaneous DDAVP with limited FE8 measurements, you get a cost-neutral way to make the whole process much more efficient.
Okay, let's take a sharp turn now. We've been focused on treatment, but what about diagnostics? Specifically, macroscopic hematuria-visible blood in the urine.
Right.
In hemophilia patients, that's often just dismissed as, oh, it's a bleed. Is that a safe assumption?
The research says a definitive no. It seems benign, but in the group they studied, they found a serious underlying pathology in 26% of patients who were evaluated.
26%. One in four.
One in four cases is not just a bleed. And the most common cause they found was urolithiasis kidney stones.
So the recommendation is that the first time this happens, it needs a full workup, just like in the general population.
Absolutely. Urinalysis, imaging, and if there are other risk factors, a referral to a urologist to rule out anything more serious.
And if something is suspected, that puts constraints on how you treat the bleeding itself, doesn't it?
It does, and they are critical. The World Federation of Hemophilia guidelines are very clear. You have to avoid desmopressin in patients who are hydrating a lot because of water retention risks.
And what about antifibrinolytics?
You have to avoid those entirely, things like tranexamic acid, because they stop clots from breaking down, which could actually obstruct the urinary tract.
Wow. So just suspecting an underlying cause completely changes your treatment plan. That's a vital piece of information.
It really is.
Okay, let's look to the future. The biggest problem with FV8 concentrate, as you said, is inhibitors. What's on the horizon to bypass that problem entirely?
This is where we get into some very cool science. We're talking about a factor IX variant called FXFIAV.
Okay.
It's a novel molecule that's been engineered to work completely independently of activated FV8. It's designed specifically to work even if the patient has those inhibitors.
So it's a new kind of bypassing agent. What did the lab studies, the in vitro studies, show?
They showed it's highly capable. It increases the FV8I equivalent activity and improves coagulation and plasma from patients across all severities, severe, moderate, and mild.
Can you break that down? What does that phenotype shift look like in simple terms?
Think of it like this. It pushes the patient toward a milder disease state. When they added it to patient plasma, severe HA plasma started to look like moderate HA plasma.
Okay.
Moderate HA plasma shifted to look like mild, and mild HA plasma shifted right into the normal range.
A huge shift. So what does this mean for those patients who are really struggling with inhibitors?
It's a game changer. The researchers confirmed that the drug's efficacy was totally unaffected by the FV8 inhibitors. It confirms its potential as a really effective bypassing agent, overcoming that central barrier in care.
Was there any concern about adding this on top of other existing therapies? Like, could you make the blood too clotty?
A valid concern, and they looked at that specifically. They combined it with other standard treatments like ARVII or emicizumab. Mm. They only saw minimal or modest effects, which suggests that adding it into the mix may not significantly increase the risk of unwanted clotting. That's a massive finding for its future clinical use.
That's very reassuring. Okay, let's bring this all together. The thread running through all of this research is this move toward incredibly personalized, precise medicine.
Yes, the takeaways are crystal clear. Personalized PK-guided combination therapy works. It's safe, it reduces costs by about 10%, and it dramatically cuts FV8 consumption.
And we also see DDAVP's limits are tied to tachyphylaxis and a clear patient knowledge gap. And that macroscopic hematuria needs a serious look, 1 in 4 times.
The whole trend is just, it's unmistakable. We're moving so fast from that old generalized dosing based on body weight toward treatments guided by individual patient data.
And not just for standard factors, but for the most complex and expensive new drugs as well.
Exactly. That's the future. We saw the potential for PK-guided dosing of emicizumab to save tens of thousands of euros a year while getting better outcomes. It's a paradigm shift where precision means better health and financial sustainability.
So here's the final thought for you to take away. If targeted PK modeling can optimize standard drugs, streamline clinic time, and cut costs for brand new therapies by over 29,000 euros a year, how might this highly precise approach fundamentally change treatment adherence and quality of life across all chronic conditions? Something to think about long after this deep dive ends.